He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now, Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. We meet again. Joel, how are you feeling today? Your headache gone?
Yeah, it's gone. I mean, I'm feeling a lot of different things, man. I tell you, the one thing...
Well, share them with me. I won't tell anybody.
The one thing, you know, I'm embarrassed. I got liquored up, puked all over the place, and then you went ahead and told, you know, 500,000 people. But guess what, man? Guess what?
Tell me.
You know why I lost 100 pounds when I went to the joint?
Tell me.
Because I didn't blame anybody. It was me. I did it. And I was a fool, acted like a fool. And I'm embarrassed by that. But I'll tell you what I'm really embarrassed by is, man, we come up here and we have a good time. We're doing a show. My son listens to this show. And sometimes he hears me talking about dragging people and beating people up and answering the door if somebody comes over. Like, that's real life. Like people are really going to come over to my house and knock on the door. Like, humans do. Not, yes, I am a barbarian, and that's something that might happen in my head, but it doesn't happen in real life. So he hears me talking about these things, and last week he goes out and gets in a fight at school.
Uh-oh. I heard about that. Lad got suspended for that.
Yeah, he did. And again, I was happy. I was happy because I acted like, in my head, hey, lad's been bullied before. You know, a couple of years ago, kid was bullying him, and we actually, given the horrible advice that we gave 2 years ago, I kind of doubled up on the way I felt, and so lad's been bullied, and a young man was trying to push some slimy stuff in his face, and lad sat on it for a whole day. This happened on Monday last week. He sat on it for a whole day, and then he went in the next day at lunchtime and socked the kid and said, let's fight. I knew what it was. I knew it was a culmination of him being bullied over the years. And I was actually proud. I was proud all the way up until his dad, who is a swimming coach and a pastor, of who I see 5 days a week at the gym. And I've only, I know he's a pastor, but I've only seen him in a coach, and he still does competitive swimming. I've only seen him in that mindset. You know, well, today he said, hey, you know, I know you're fighting. I haven't seen you in a couple of days. And I was like, hey, good looking out. You know, I was in Vegas. We did a show. And then he stopped and he said, well, you heard about lad and my son. And it dropped to me. And then.
So you didn't know that was his son.
I didn't know it was his son. And then it wasn't somebody's dad talking to me. And it wasn't the guy I see at the gym talking to me. He turned his hat around and talked like a pastor for 20 minutes. And I felt really, really bad because he took it as he understood lad's been bullied before and he wished that hadn't happened and wished there was another way to deal with things. And now me as a father, somebody who was proud of my son last week, man, it takes a little bit more strength to not fight than to fight. And as strong as my son is, and as many things that he's overcome and many obstacles that he's overcome, we're going to get him into wrestling, and he's going to learn that part of humility and strength, and that's a part where you compete on a mat, not in a playground, not in a schoolyard. And for all of the things that I'm embarrassed for over the past few days, the most is being a bully dad and being proud of his kid for socking somebody in the face.
All right, boom. Well, there's a counseling session. I hope you feel better. And I hear your message in that. You're right. And I, you know what? The greatest thing about wrestling is when the match is over, they shake hands. That is the single greatest thing that whoever came up with wrestling, they put in. Because that is important. When you have your dispute, you do it.
You liked that counseling session, did you?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're not you know, burying me and trying to humiliate me, that's cool for the show. But if I want to just come on here and be real for a minute, that bothers you. Does that infuriate you?
I think that perhaps you misinterpreted. It was more of a segue when I said it was a counseling session, but I hear what you're saying. I mean, it felt like you were philosophizing a little bit and that, you know, something had happened. Look, let's make this a little bit lighter note real fast, because there was something funny that happened in that way. I had called Lad. I said, hey, what happened at school today? And Lad told me the whole story. He was very honest about it. When you met the kid's dad, even on accident, the kid had told his father the same story the lad had told us. So both, you know, there's two sides to every story. This was one of those rare cases where both sides were the exact same. They both told the truth and told us what happened. But where Lad got jammed up on a lighter note was some kid had videotaped this. When Lad had told me the story, one thing about Lad is he doesn't know how to lie. If he ever lies, he will then come back and tell you that's a lie, that's not what happened. Which then makes it the truth again. So Lad had told me when he said the story, he said, oh, I didn't think I would get caught. I had looked around. I saw where the adults were. You know, there were some girls around. But this happened. He put goo in my face, and I've been bullied for 7 years, and I went and stood up for myself, even if it was after the fact. But somebody had videotaped it and turned it into the principal. So the principal brought him in, tried to give Lad a in-school suspension. But Lad realized that if he did that, that was prison. He was just going to be sitting there with nothing to do and bored. So he told the principal, you know, you should probably just send me home so I can cool off. Well, Lad's home is straight across the street. He doesn't need a parent to pick him up. He doesn't need a ride, a bus. He just has to cross the street. So all of a sudden, Lad's back in the house taking a nap and playing baseball on the video game system there. So I did think that there was a little bit of a lighter note. Nobody was hurt, so there you are.
Yeah, and I was actually making a point to get riled up on you there. I wanted to bring that to a different point, and that point is this. You carve me up sometimes, and when we'll see people, and they'll be like, "Hey, well, how do you take that?" And I'm like, "Well, that's my part in here. That's what I do. This is Chael's show. He's giving me an opportunity. That's what I do. You know, we go off to Vegas. I get all liquored up. I make a fool of myself. You choose to tell it on the show again, man. That's your job. I know my role, and I'm not sure if you've caught any of this John McCarthy noise that's been going on, and we've talked about this before, and it's usually a corner man, a coach, and even a wife that starts talking to the media that either spins stuff up one way or it kills something. Well, you didn't talk about the Tito fight on the show, and I know that was hard for you. You also didn't talk about anything about that fight until Tito came out and said, hey, I offered to fight Fedor. That irritated you, and it made you be real for a second. You came on, and you just laid it out, and you got real for a second. And then out of the blue, John McCarthy comes out and says, if he said tap, he must have been talking to a different dimension. And I'm like, A, why is that news? And B, John, what point in your daily life did you think that was something that you need to put out there? I don't understand in this business why people don't know their place. I'm telling you, I do. I do know my place. I don't know if I'm going to be here tomorrow or the next day. You know, if we have a disagreement or something, unless you really twist me out of my brain, we're going to deal with it out of here. I'm not going to give an interview. I'm not going to tell anything that happens in your life. And then here we got a guy. What good is that? What does that do for anything?
Now, you lost me a little bit. What specifically are you speaking about? So you're saying that John was the referee in the match, and he has come out and talked about the match, right?
Yeah, he's come out. He gave an interview that, hey, if that Chael was listening, it must have been hearing things from a different dimension because Tito didn't say anything. Then he backs that up 3 days later with a tweet that says the same thing. If Chael was hearing things, he was hearing things from a third dimension.
Yeah, I couldn't possibly care less if John wanted to weigh in on it. But I do understand your point, and it's really hard to be this close to any kind of notoriety, whether you wanted to call it fame or exposure or whatever word you wanted to use. It is very hard to be that close but not be the guy. And if there's a camera on and there's an opportunity and you can get in on a little bit of that, human nature will lead you to do that. And, yeah, a referee is, they have a job to do. But it's a very specific and very limited job. And, John hasn't made a dollar in this sport for himself or for anybody else. But he's a damn good referee. And he's got a place. And I can tell you, when John gets assigned to my fights, the first time I ever had John McCarthy, I was excited. That was a big deal. And, I always feel safe when John's in there. I'll hear things about referees just as a whole, not just on John. And some aren't always positive. This guy's the worst ref. And I've never met a bad ref. I just haven't had that experience. Even as a fan where I watch something go on TV, that's a really hard job because you're making a call in the moment, instantaneous. And if you are a half a second late, all of a sudden it's the wrong call. And if you are a half a second early, all of a sudden it's a wrong call. It's just a really hard job. And I can appreciate that from doing some officiating myself just in a wrestling match where you got to hold up scores. I just think it's a tough job. I've never met a bad referee. But I do understand that there is a place. And if you are not contributing to the industry financially, then your part of the industry is very limited. And for me to say he's never made a dollar is fair. It's not a slide. And to say he's never made a dollar for anybody else. He's not a marketing guy. He's not a guy that can drive a ticket or create a storyline is also fair. But that's the way that it should be. A referee should not speak unless spoken to. He works for a very specific person, which is the executive director. That's who signs his check, and that's who assigns him. And if a referee gets out of bounds somewhere, and this isn't even to say that John did. John's got a big problem, which is he said Tito didn't speak. Tito said that he said, "I'm good," when I had him in the submission. I said that Tito said, "Tap, tap." So Tito and I both agree that he spoke. Now John's out on an island by himself saying, no, he didn't say a word at all. It's like, John, why you would possibly weigh in when we're doing something here is so far beyond me, I can't understand. But he has a guy that's been on the inside and was forced to look out. Then, all of a sudden he was on the outside trying to look in. If he didn't learn his lessons from that or he wants to go about his career in a different way, man, I got no problem with it. Go out and have your fun. But to your point, there are lanes and there are lessons learned by many guys that tried to overstep and be part of the show, but didn't have the courage or the skills to get in there and be part of the show.
Listen, I didn't know you were going to go down that path last week when we were doing that Q&A. You didn't know I was going to go down this path today. I want to see you fight Tito again because God, I just want to see it. And if there's a lot of people out there that do want to see it, if there's somebody that doesn't have anything to do with it, man, just stay out of it.
Yeah.
Just stay out of it. I know they take a picture with you and they put it on their Facebook, but that doesn't mean we need you promoting fights, Big John.
Well, and that is the bottom line. And again, I don't really want to stay on Big John. I've got a limited relationship with him and it's very positive and I respect him. He's done a great job. Never been for me, never been against me, been right down the middle, right where he should be. And frankly, I've never seen him buddy up to anybody. He calls him straight. Big John does a great job, and I'm fine with it. I will speak to your point, though, and I don't have any interest in fighting Tito again. I don't think that's going to happen. He quit the sport, and he sucks, and I'm not a bully. I've never in my life bullied a guy or gone after somebody I knew I could beat. That would be a first with Tito because he was so bad when I felt him. But if there is any kind of fire in an industry that can draw business and you come out of left field as a referee who works only for a commission and an executive director who then keeps their doors open by collecting 6% of a revenue tax and you come and throw water on a flame, that's going to be interesting for you. That's going to be very interesting for you to have a veteran like that to come out and make those kind of decisions. Again, it's his life and it's his career. That's an interesting thing to do.
Now, Big John, Big news. Big news. We talked about it before. GSP is back, and now he's fighting Michael Bisping for the strap.
Yeah, big news 2 days ago, but we haven't been in front of the audience, so I'll agree with you. Listen, I got a couple of feels on that, Joel. I mean, right out of the gate, and you'll recall, that is the fight I predicted. I think you predicted it was going to be Diaz. I predicted that it would be Bisping was the most likely. So good for me, got one right. But I also predicted that I would prefer it be Anderson Silva. That fight was talked about for a long time. George isn't the champ. Anderson isn't the champ. It would make good timing-wise sense to get that done. Business-wise makes good sense. You had then brought up Conor McGregor's name. Well, that would be the biggest fight in the history of the sport. I liked that as well, and I think Conor's crazy enough to do it, and I know George would do it. So then I started to think, well, maybe it's going to go in that direction. I know George specifically wanted to fight Bisping. World title fight, different weight class, a lot of meaning on that. And he likes the matchup. Bisping really wants to fight George St. Pierre because the way his contract is structured as being champion. I mean, he's staring, if I was even to tell you how many millions of dollars down the pike on the back end on pay-per-view bonuses, it'd blow your mind. So Bisping wanted that fight too, and I know that they did their level best to politic and to get it. I'm excited for the match. The return of George St. Pierre is exciting. In the wake of the matches that we just discussed and hypothesized about, George St. Pierre, the parody of him and Anderson Silva finally happening, the parody of George St. Pierre versus Conor McGregor finally happening, the greatest of all time versus the greatest of this time. Really, really big business and really compelling matchups. Of those matchups, this is the least intriguing to me as far as getting a buzz and excitement and wanting to know where it is. I think it was interesting that this broke on SportsCenter. I think it was interesting that this broke 48 hours ago. And nowhere without a search can you find a story about this. It has been buried that far down on all of the MMA sites. They are going to need to spend a lot of money and do a lot of promotion to make this a mega fight. This is a big fight either way. I'm not pissing on this fight. In fairness, as far as the matchups that we thought we could have, this one's a little bit weird. And it's also interesting in that, what is George's play? Not what is George telling the guys in the office to get his way and get this done. What is his actual mindset? If he was to capture a 185-pound championship, and all I can do anytime we sit down here and speculate and guess is put myself in his shoes and think, what would I do? And then assume that the other guy is going to do that same thing. So if you take George St. Pierre, does he like the matchup with Bisping? Yeah. George, most effective MMA wrestler to have ever done it against Bisping, who's not a wrestler. I think that George really likes that. Middleweight championship, main event, big money fight. George likes all of those things. Does George like the next step should he become the champion? Does he want to fight a guy like Yoel Romero, who is just simply huge in comparison to George? George is a welterweight and even talked about being a lightweight. George's words was that I might come back at lightweight. Now, I think that's where some of the Conor talk came in. George has never speculated about going up to 185. In fact, when it was discussed that he would go to 185, it was done one time for one opponent, which was Anderson Silva, and George said he's just too big. If I'm going to do that fight, I need an ample amount of time. I need to sign a contract, and then that fight needs to be 10 months away so that I can change my body and get big enough for that fight. He didn't like it. So, take Bisping out. Let's say George beats him and gets past him. Does George want to fight Yoel Romero? Does he want to fight Jacare? Does he want to fight Chris Weidman, who could be a light heavyweight today? Does he want to fight Gegard Mousasi, who up until 15 months ago was a light heavyweight and as much as 36 months ago was even in the heavyweight division over in Japan? Does he want to fight with those guys? Or is this a case where he comes in, he grabs the money, he solidifies his legacy, not that it was ever in question, but he solidifies it in absolute stone and walks away? And I think that's where a chess player is taking a gamble.
I think that, you know, when this news broke, I said, okay, you called this, and then you were like, that's not the biggest fight in the world. And I said, well wow, you're missing if he's fighting for the title and he wins, then he'll face Conor for this. And you laughed at me. You were like, no, he's not gonna bypass 170. And then I've had a couple days to think about this, and I'm like, you know what? let me speculate. And what probably happened is I said this was probably the third fight. Connor was the first one, Diaz was the second one, and this was the third one, and was probably going to be at 180 pounds. And then the UFC, because I believe, just like you said, that GSP has no interest in fighting those other monsters. No interest at all. But he does have an interest in this fight. Said, okay, I'll go ahead and I'll do it at 185 instead of 180. He already knows where he's going, and that we know if he's back, the fight to make at some point is him and Connor. And that's probably where it's going.
Yeah, and I think you're left field on that, man. I don't understand why you ever predicted it would be George St. Pierre and Nick Diaz. There's no calling for that fight. There's no draw in that fight. There's no need to see that fight again. The first fight wasn't overly close. If you're just looking to sell some tickets, both of those guys sell tickets, so why put them together? Send Nick this direction and George in a different direction. Do two pay-per-views. You're going to do 900,000 to 1.1 with either one of those guys. So why put them together and still do the 900 to 1.1 in an insignificant fight that's not for a title or even a title contender? I never understood why you were predicting Nick Diaz, other than I know you're a big Nick fan and wanted to see that match. But as far as the Connor thing goes, you know, I think you're out in left field on that one too. Your original prediction to me privately was that George goes out, he beats Bisping, then him and Connor fight. I'm going, well, Joel, that doesn't make any kind of sense. You had a little bit of a storyline when Connor goes from 45 to 55 and is successful, but he then can't go to 85. He'd have to stop by 170 first and be successful and then go up to 85. And even then, it's a stretch, but it can be done. There's just simply no storyline here. If George goes and grabs the 85-pound title and then you want to make this mega fight with him and Connor, you could do it. You could throw him at 170 just to do it. It wouldn't hurt the 55-pound title, but it would hurt the 85-pound title should George lose. I think we're just talking crazy land there. That doesn't make any kind of sense. The most reasonable conclusion that you would have here is if George was to go out and beat Bisping, George is not going to want to fight some of those monsters that are cutting down to 185. George is 193 pounds the last time I worked out with him, and he's not in training camp. He's going to walk around about 187. Once he's fully in shape, and that's going to be as simple as go to bed the night before weigh-ins and don't eat anything until you get off of the scale. He's not going to have to sweat out a single ounce, and some of those guys are just so big. And George has been in the workout room with Chris Weidman and trained with him, and did just fine. I'm not saying he had any problems there, but what I'm saying is he does understand that there's a size difference, and I just don't predict that he'd want to run it back. And there's no reason for him to. He's got a ton of money. He's got a ton of fame. He's got a ton of memories and experiences. And if he can go get that 185-pound belt, and it is a good matchup for him. That's not to say that I even predict him as a winner. I mean, let's let this play out a little bit longer. But it is a good matchup for him.
This tomorrow's card, UFC 209. Do you think GSP will be there?
Yeah, I imagine George will be there. Yeah, right in the front row.
Okay.
Looking great. He'll have a suit and a new haircut.
And your three picks.
Hey, where's that fight at? Are they fighting? They're fighting in Vegas.
They're fighting in Vegas.
T-Mobile?
Yep.
T-Mobile Arena. My three picks. Okay, well, let's see here. You know, the Wonder Boy fight is really hard because Wonder Boy is really hard. That's a weird style, and I can go back to my time when Machida was making his run through it. The biggest problem with Machida, and I had two teammates fight him in Dan Henderson and Randy Couture, and the biggest problem with Machida is you get one crack at him. You can't practice for that. There was nobody that we could find to bring into the gym to spar, you know, with Randy or spar with Dan when they were getting ready, that could do Machida. He had such a unique and bizarre style that you get one crack to get out there, see some of those movements, test the timing, defend them, and get your own offense off. And as the fights go on, the guys that were able to make it some rounds with Machida, they did start doing better and better. They did start to figure him out. I think we saw that with Tyron. Tyron had a very hard open with Thompson, as everybody has, but he did start to do a little bit better as the fight progressed. I think that's a major thing in Tyron's advantage. Now that mask is off. Now that unpredictability and uniqueness is off, and it will help him. Bottom line is he's still in there with a killer. So I think that, you know, I think Tyron won that first fight. I understand that it was ruled a draw. Tyron brings up the point, well, I knocked him down four times. He brings that up in every interview he does. But he's right. That's fair. He did knock him down four times, and he did it later in the round. I think that was the fourth round. So we did start to feel him and start to find his timing and range. I think that's going to help Tyron a lot. Who wins that fight? You know, I don't know if I'm ready to make a prediction. If you're going to hold my feet to it, I'm going to go with Tyron. But I'm not overly confident. That is a really tough guy in Wonder Boy with a really unique style. Now, I do like Overeem over Hunt. I don't love that Hunt is in a lawsuit with the UFC. I don't love where his head's at. I don't love all the complaining that he's done. I don't know that that helps him or hurts him. I think that's a really hard match. I think Hunt is going to be able to stay focused longer than Overeem. He does Overeem loses his focus a little bit. He comes out on a sprint. But overall, Overeem's just got more tools, in my opinion. I also like the Rashad fight versus Kelly. That's not getting any kind of attention. There's another fight on the card. What one am I missing?
Khabib versus Ferguson.
Oh, gosh, of course. Interesting fight. You know, I've been on the Ferguson bandwagon before anybody else was because I was in the room with him at the Rain Training Center. I got to see him on a daily basis, and I saw how good he was. I watched him wear out some big names, some UFC stars. He wore them out. They could not keep up. They had to go sit down and could not finish workouts, and Ferguson standing in the middle waiting for somebody else to come in. Khabib is a whole nother deal because he's a one-dimensional guy, but he does that dimension better than anybody. And if Khabib can get on top, he can cause some problems. But Ferguson does have some very unique jiu-jitsu with that 10th planet system. Can he keep up with the pace, and can he push through the damage? Ferguson's going to take some major damage on bottom. Can he sustain it? Nobody else has been able to. Nobody else has even been close. And I think you have to look at that. Khabib has one big problem when he fights, and it's with his left hand. He puts his left hand in the wrong position, and it's about 1 inch underneath his chin. And if you're coming in from that left side, you've got a wide-open target, which if Khabib ever meets with Conor, you better believe, because if Conor can do anything, he can game plan. Conor can come out with game plans and strategies better than anybody. And if Khabib kept that left hand up 2 inches higher, I'd feel great about him. I feel good about him now. 23 men have tried to take him, and 23 have made a slip. He has a perfect record of 23-0. But he needs to keep that left hand up. Sooner or later, he's going to get popped, and he's going to go to sleep.
All right. Well, we were actually in Vegas. We were going back and forth on who I would pick between Woodley and Thompson. Well, when I was at the window, I chose Woodley. I got Woodley, Khabib, and Mark Hunt.
Okay, and what one are you feeling the least confident in? I mean, are you like me that Wonder Boy and Woodley could go either way? And we've got good reason for saying that. I mean, the guys just fought, and they went to a draw. So we've got a historical reference to look back on of just how close these guys are. I mean, is that the one where you really think, no, Wonder Boy's got him? Or are you going, yeah, I really don't know, but this is who I bet on?
Yes, you're right, 100%. I don't know. It's the obvious answer is whoever learned more from the last fight. If I'm coaching Woodley, I'm like, go give him everything you got from the second the bell rings, and you're in a two to three round fight. T. Woodley even said, "Hey, I watch how this guy fight. I had a plan. I followed through with my plan entirely, and I would just say, man, you're a killer. Just go be a killer."
Yeah,
but that's why I don't coach.
But I tell you, that's one thing that Woodley won't do. Woodley's a slow starter at times. If he sees his range, he steps in and he unleashes, right? We saw him do that to win the championship, you know, with Robbie Lawler. But if he doesn't see that opening that he's looking for, he's very patient. He'll stand back. He'll listen to people boo. He'll do whatever he needs to do. He's looking for very specific openings. And finding those, particularly with a guy like Stephen Thompson, it's rare. There's not a lot of openings. That's a really weird style. I like how Tyron trained. I like that he brought in Sage Northcutt. I really think that he did a lot of things well. But it's a close fight. I just have to acknowledge that. And you know, the one thing that Thompson did for this fight is he put on about 10 pounds of muscle. Where he thought he was getting out muscled or why he would need that, I'm not sure. But you got to work really hard to do that. So, look, we got a good fight on our hands. We got a really good fight on our hands. One thing about it, Joel, it's 8 a.m. down here in the studio on Friday. These guys got to get on the scale in 1 hour. Anybody that wants to learn how fighters cut weight, get the ultimate Weight Cut. Go to ultimateweightcut.com. Use the promo code BADGUY and you will save 40%. You do not have to wait. This is not a book that will be shipped to you. It is digital. So the second you enter your information, it will unlock and you will have it at your fingertips. If you want to lose weight, if you want to diet or get in shape, do not waste any time. Don't waste another minute, another hour, another day. Don't make this something I wish I would have started last week. Start it right now. Go to ultimateweightcut.com. Use the promo code BADGUY. Thank me later.
Well, guys, I'm down 15 pounds on the program, but I didn't use the promo code, and I had to pay full sticker because I'm a idiot.
I told you that promo code five times. You kept putting a space in there. It's not bad space guy. It's bad guy. One word. B-A-D-G-U-Y. Don't be like Joel. Don't overpay.
And don't puke all over the hotel.
Why was it? Why does a guy, when he pukes, though, why does he sleep in it? Is that part of the drunkenness, or does he not know, or he just, at that point, doesn't care?
God, I threw so many softballs up to you here, you just had to go back to it. Anyway, we
really do want an answer on that. Sometimes I ask buddy, you about alcohol,
know.
And you just blow it off, but I really do want answers.
I do not know. I do not know.
You can't think for a second, gee, when I've puked the bed, here's why I don't get up and clean it up.
I wonder it myself. Every time I get up, I'm like, well, the bathroom's right there. Why didn't I go there? So if I haven't been able to figure it out in 35 years, God, I love you. All right, listen. I don't understand
why you do that. That is so infuriating. I don't know why you won't answer that question. I mean, I ask you other questions about drunkenness, and you just blow it off like I'm trying to irritate you. I'm genuinely wondering, why is it once you vomit that you don't then get up and go into the bathroom? Why sleep in your vomit?
I have no idea because
if you don't know why you do it, who else can I ask? There's no one else I can ask. Hey, why does Joel do this? I got to ask you.
All right. There you go. Yeah, what do you want to do with this?
I just want you to answer.
Okay, because I love laying in puke. Okay?
That's weird.
I love the smell of puke.
That's a weird thing.
Yeah. Of course not. I'm passed out, blacked out, drunk. I don't know what's going on.
That's the answer.
There you go.
Why didn't you just say that?
I thought I did just now. All right, listen, we've got a surprise. Remember the time I absolutely went postal on you and flipped out?
Yeah.
Well, before that, we had Jay Gimmick Anderson on, and he came up with Baby. Well, he is a huge, 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 huge insider in the wrestling business, and he's calling right now. Can you go ahead and get him on?
So far in 2017, Forbes and Podcast One have already launched three highly acclaimed shows. The Interview with Steve Bertone features the business world's most interesting names, like Adam Carolla, Twitter founder Sean Rad, and Hollywood's own Jessica Alba.
So I spent a lot of my childhood in hospital beds.
Under 30 with Steve Goldblum talks to the movers and shakers, like Nation Builder CEO Jim Gilliam and NFL Big Game winner Martellus Bennett.
Guys are afraid to be themselves because of their marketing deal.
And The List with Art of Charm's Jordan Harbinger.
We'll get behind-the-scenes insight and information that doesn't make the print cut.
Next up, Sports Money with Mike Ozanian talking to team owners, athletes, and industry leaders about the enterprise and money behind supreme athletic competition. Forbes on Podcast One. Not just entertaining, informative. Subscribe now at iTunes and don't forget to rate, review, and share. You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
All right, we have Jay Gimmick Anderson on. Now, Chael, if you remember where Baby started from, Baby started from Gimmick Anderson, and I stole it from him the day I went postal on you about 4 months ago. Now, he is one of the biggest insiders in the WWE, and I asked him to call in to say what is going on with the heavyweight division in both WWE Raw and SmackDown, and what are we looking at for WrestleMania?
And I'd like to add that the Godfather has been on the run from Gimmick Anderson ever since he stole Baby. He's been hard on the run, man. I've been hot on his trail.
Baby,
that's right, Baby. So on the SmackDown side of things, I guess I'll start with that just because that's the one that's kind of got me all hot and bothered right now. I don't know if you guys saw the Randy Orton deal last night, but Randy Orton has been slow burning a turn on Bray Wyatt for a while. This started back when the Wyatt family was beating up on Orton, and Orton kind of did a deal where he said, if you can't beat him, join him. So he's been kind of an oddball in there, but it's been working, and he slowly just kind of dismantled the Wyatt family, driven a wedge between Bray and Luke. And every time that Bray and Randy are on camera, Bray seems to stand in front of him. And Randy is kind of standing behind him, and Bray's cutting one of those long, winding, howling promos. And Randy, every time they're on camera, will just do a little something. He would just do a little something. He'd just eyeball Bray in such a way, or he'd look at his title, or he'd kind of sneer at it. They've been slow burning this thing, and last night it finally paid off when Randy Orton set the Wyatt family, or basically the Wyatt compound, on fire and burned Sister Abigail to a total to eternal damnation, which is pretty fine work. You just don't see storylines like that anymore from WWE, these long and slow burn storylines. I'm a big fan of that.
So what are they doing that for, though? What is the payoff here? I've got to assume WrestleMania, or are those guys already booked up?
Yeah, so they done the thing where Randy had won the Royal Rumble, okay? And so Orton did the thing where he denied himself the title shot a couple of weeks ago and said that he wasn't going to do it. He wasn't going to turn on Bray, and then they let Luke Harper and AJ Styles fight for that slot. So I think the idea is that Randy is taking his spot back at WrestleMania, and that gives AJ Styles something to do, because they're going to have to rip the carpet out from under AJ Styles. And the rumor is, and I'm not a big fan of this, but the rumor is that it's going to be Shane McMahon and AJ Styles at WrestleMania as well. So Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton is the big SmackDown match at WrestleMania that everybody's kind of got their eye on.
All right. Well, I will tell you, you called that last week, and I missed the Raw this week. So way to be all over that. So what else do you got down in the WWE land? What's going on? What should we expect?
Okay, so you know you got Owens and Goldberg coming up. I don't see how you have Goldberg lay out Brock Lesnar twice and not have him totally squash Kevin Owens. Now I'm one of those guys. I'm kind of old school, and I like the guys that hang around every week. I feel like the guys like Ambrose and Owens and AJ Styles are kind of the MVPs, and here come these stars at WrestleMania time, the stars of yesteryear coming in and lapping up the spoils. But I believe that they're going to have Goldberg go over there, and it's going to be Goldberg and Lesnar for the title. Now, I would be surprised if Goldberg didn't catch a beatdown from Lesnar after that thing at Fastlane. But I think that's the biggest match that you can put on the top of the bill. The only thing is, I don't think the match is going to deliver, you know, if you let them go any length of time. Brock has his style of working that works for him, but he's got to be able to beat that ass for 15 minutes. And I don't know that Goldberg could keep up taking an ass whipping for 15 minutes. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know. I feel like that's the direction they're going to go. And as far as Owens, you know, he's got a thing with Jericho. They did a pretty nice little slow turn with Jericho and Owens too. And I feel like that doesn't have to have the title. It would be better if it did, but don't forget, Jericho's the United States champion. So that gives them a little prize to go through. But, you know, I'm kind of with you guys. You don't have to have a title. As long as I'm invested in the story, I'm good. You don't have to have that belt.
You know, Chael said the same thing about the Goldberg thing. If you're gonna have him go up against Owens, you put the strap on him. My only question is, we all believe Goldberg's got one coming. Brock's laid out for him twice. Goldberg's got one coming at WrestleMania. If you put the strap on Brock, Brock's not going to work that kind of schedule.
No, he's not. And there's a rumor out there that Goldberg has signed a little bit of an extension with WWE, and that's going to keep him on TV. But I don't think you do that. I think Goldberg is one of those acts that he's going to come in, you know, people will pop for him for so long. But then that's going to wear off, and he's going to turn into a joke. You know, these hardcore, these dudes that are living in their mama's basement, you know, working the internet smarks, I like to call them. They like to ride guys to the top and jump off the bandwagon. You know, Chael, you were talking about Enzo and Big Cass, how big of a pop they got, and how Enzo is working this East Coast gimmick, and he's just spitting fire on the mic, and people love him. Well, you know, they're riding to the top. And just recently, all the internet guys have started jumping off the damn bandwagon. Sheamus laid him out with a brogue kick in L.A. the other day, and he was getting thank you Sheamus chants for laying out Enzo Amore. So it's like, you can't keep these sumbitches happy. The only people that enjoy wrestling the way that it's supposed to be enjoyed is guys like me and you and kids. That's the only people that enjoy wrestling the way it's supposed to be enjoyed.
Yeah, so tell me this about WrestleMania, Gimmick. You said something interesting there. I mean, look, the whole thing is Lesnar and Goldberg. But you said that Shane is supposed to wrestle who, AJ Styles?
Yes.
And what's the storyline there?
Well, I think the storyline there, if you've been following, I don't know how closely, but the storyline is AJ Styles has been, you can make an argument for one of two people dragging SmackDown. It's AJ Styles or Dean Ambrose. They're 1 and 1A. AJ Styles has been kicking ass and taking names for the last year, and he was the champ, and then he lost his championship in an elimination chamber to John Cena. He's hot about that because he's been pulling the wagon for a year, and he's not getting his come up. You know, he's not getting his respect, and you know, it's almost that Shane and Daniel Bryan have almost even gone heel, making AJ jump through all these hoops. You know, and they're fixing to pull the carpet out from under him again. Now, I don't know why you have a guy. I don't know why you have to have a thoroughbred like AJ Styles working with Shane McMahon, unless you're going to do some kind of stunt. You know, the only reason they brought in Shane McMahon last year is because they needed a little star power because all their guys were hurt. All you had was Roman and Triple H, and you had Lesnar and Ambrose, and that's all the hell you had. So they had to bring somebody with some star power in to wrestle Undertaker. You know, they don't have that problem this year.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's healthy except for Seth Rollins.
And Gimmick, I'll add to this, you know, I was there. I was in Dallas. I watched that. But Shane's also crazy, right? He's a team player. He climbs up to the top of the cage and jumps off, lands on the table. It was this big moment. But, you know, that's kind of what Shane is known for. He's a team player that goes out and takes some big bump one time a year. So what kind of thing could he do with AJ Styles? I mean, those two are just going to go wrestle? That doesn't make any kind of sense. There's got to be some kind of gimmick on it, right?
Oh, yeah. It'd have to be a street fight or something like that. I don't think they'd do a Hell in a Cell again. Have to be a street fight or a ladder match. And I just don't see the dang point, you know? You got to have AJ out there. You know, AJ Styles is the perfect time or the perfect guy to work with, like a Samoa Joe or a Nakamura. Somebody's going to have a 5-star match with him. You're wasting AJ Styles if you're putting him in there with Shane McMahon. I love Shane McMahon. He's fantastic, but he is not going to have a nice, you know, 30-minute tit for tat, you know, Savage and Steamboat wrestling match with you. He has to have a gimmick. He has to have a table to go through. He has to have something high to jump off of, and all that's fine and good. But you don't need to waste AJ Styles with that.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, and that's the other thing with the Shane matches is there's really no question on how it's going to end. You just simply can't put him over, and he's not arrogant enough like the rest of the family that he would demand that he needs to go over. He's happy to put somebody over, do whatever's best for business. He's a hell of a worker. He's a hell of a good athlete. But it is a little bit weird, you know, when the guy comes in one time a year and then pushes one of your stars to the brink, man, that's tough. That's tough for me. I get the business. I like it. I look forward to Shane's matches, but it's still a little bit tough. It's like, man, I can only suspend reality so far. Okay, if this is a regular sport and somebody does 300 matches a year and I do none, I'm not beating that guy. If somebody's working the road and training every single day in any regular sport, and I've done two matches in the last 7 years, I'm not beating that guy. And so, you know, so that was a little bit hard for me as tit for tat as Shane went with The Undertaker. He did the right thing on the end. He had the big spot, and he put the guy over. But it was still a little bit more competitive than it should have been. If you're telling me that Brock Lesnar, a UFC champion, could get squashed by a weirdo, you know, in 30 seconds. It's tough, man. At some point, it's got to look like a fight. It has to look like two guys that are offering resistance to one another, trying to get a pinfall or a submission, like the olden day. That's what wrestling is. It's not just entertainment. It's also got to be somewhere that I can suspend reality and buy in. And some of its level of ridiculousness is a little bit far from me. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree, and I think most of the people that are watching this stuff agree with you and I, okay? if you kind of look at it, the flip-flop and fly-in finish is going away. People aren't buying into that kind of stuff anymore. Now, the indie guys will. The guys that are watching these dudes doing double and triple Frankensteiners and bingo halls. But if you notice, like, the guys with the over finishers now are the guys that are, you know, the stuff that would work in a real fight, you know? The phenomenal forearm is way over, you know? I'm kind of with you. You've got to have a certain level of realism to this stuff in order for us to buy into it. And I'll tell you, they're on the brink of bringing this thing back. They went through a dark period there where they're top heavy. They're building stars now, man. They're four or five deep on each show with a big, big star. You know, on the Raw side, you got Reigns. People jumped off the bandwagon with him a couple of times, but he's still a big star. You got Owens, you got Jericho. They're building these rosters. It's almost back as thick as it was in the late 90s when I was watching it as a kid. It's like, damn, you know, they're really building this back up. And I think that stuff like Shane McMahon going tit for tat with The Undertaker, to your point, is sort of a step back, to be honest. I don't know if you remember Shawn Michaels a few years back, or several years back, worked with Vince McMahon and had a tit for tat match with Vince McMahon. Shawn Michaels is the best damn wrestler on the planet. Why is he not kicking Vince McMahon's ass in 3 minutes?
You sure. Know? Yeah, and there's some guys that can break those rules and get away with it. And, of course, the McMahon family qualifies for that, particularly when you've got the oddity of them going out there. If you ever want to be able to run Shane out ever again, he can't get squashed on Saturday. And then 3 years later, we're supposed to make believe that he got better. They've got to be good competitive matches. So I do get some of that storyline. But I do stand by my point, man. This has to look like two guys that are offering resistance. And when you see some of this stuff where you've got these high flyers, and I realize how big that is in Japan and how big it is in Mexico, I also realize how goddamn small those arenas are. So even though that does entice and bring 200 people to their feet, it's not great for business, and that's what I'm speaking to. Hey, Anderson, I'm seeing this all the way down to promos. Guys will come out with a scripted promo. One guy goes off script a little bit, and the other guy doesn't know how to respond. If two guys are doing a promo, look, if you say to me, hey, Chael, I'm going to slap your wife, and I'm going to pin you 1, 2, 3. And I say, well, you're not going to pin me 1, 2, 3. Listen, in real life, I've got to weigh in on the other thing that you said, that you're going to slap my wife. I have to weigh in on that. I see guys do these promos. One guy gets a little bit off from where the other guy was agreed to do in the back, and he doesn't respond to it. It's like, look, this still has to look like real life. That's what is driving wrestling. And when you get 90% of the guys that don't do it and 10% that do, it's the 10% that do, even though they're the minority, they're the ones that are still selling the tickets. They're the ones that are pushing the industry forward. And the rest of the guys have got to catch on, from the promos to the in-ring work. It still needs to look like conflict.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, speaking of wives, now, I'm down here in the Dirty W. I've just taken the queen out for a seafood lunch. You and I have a lot in common, Chael, and I don't know if you know that. We're both married to hot blondes named Brittany. So I know that you're a good man just from that. Now, I want to turn the tables on you a little bit. I want to ask you about this Khabib and Tony Ferguson thing.
All right.
That seems like the nastiest freaking match in months to me right there. I was watching the countdown show and got so fired up. I want to know what you think happens in that.
Look,
in that fight.
It's not to say that Khabib cannot deal with adversity, but it is a fair assessment to say he's never been faced with adversity. Khabib Nurmagomedov has ran through, no one even close, ran through every single piece of competition he's had, including Rafael Dos Anjos before Rafael was the world champion. So people, you know, that was kind of like a fine wine where that fight looked better over time. Nobody really appreciated it at the time Khabib did it. But once Rafael went on his big run all the way to the strap, that's when you look back and go, oh my goodness, this Nurmagomedov's a real deal. And that also coincided with the time that Khabib got hurt and was on the shelf for 20 months, so never really got his chance. I guess the point I'm trying to make is Ferguson is the toughest fight Khabib has ever had. If Ferguson, first off, can get to him, can kick him, can touch him, can threaten some submissions, can stay alive in there, let's see what that does to Khabib. And the other thing is, can Ferguson do that? Ferguson is going to get taken down at some point. He's going to get pressured and he's going to get pounded. But Ferguson is tough as old salami. So when he doesn't go away and he gets back up and gets in Khabib's face, you know, and this is a five-round contest. Khabib's also never been in that situation. So I think there's a couple of questions there that are not foregone conclusions. This is Khabib's toughest fight. This is a more well-rounded fighter. This is a guy with five-round experience that's hungry and that wants it and has a shot at Conor on the line, which will be a life-changing payday. Different kind of motivation. Khabib will experience that same motivation. But how will he deal with the adversity? And the bigger question, when I want to bring up the word adversity, I'm hypothesizing that Ferguson can offer him more resistance than other guys have. So I really don't know. Ferguson is the real deal. He's the more complete fighter. But there's still something to be said for somebody with one dimension that does that dimension better than the next guy.
I hear you. So if I'm hearing you correctly, it seems like you're kind of more on the Ferguson side of things.
Well, you know what? No, you did it. I kind of made it sound like that. I actually think that Khabib has the major advantage, but there is some questions there that Khabib's going to have to answer. Ferguson is a lot like Conor McGregor. He's going to stay on you. He's going to keep a good pace. Not a great wrestler, but great everywhere else. Great with the punching, great with the kicking, great with the defense, dog tough. He's hungry and he wants it. It's a very similar fight. If Khabib can run through Tony, Khabib can run through Conor. But we still have to see the fight.
Goodness.
This is a really, really hard fight.
All right, Gimmick, you got anything to close up? We got to get over to the weigh-ins.
I'm with you, brother. Thank you all so much.
Anderson, you're a good man. Talk to you.
All right, thanks, Gimmick. There's the guy that I stole Baby from.
How did you meet him? You know, he's a damn good guest. He's the kind of guy, like, when I listen to Jim Rome's show, which I just think is the number one show in the history of sports talk shows, that's the kind of guy that would make it in the jungle. That's the kind of guy that wouldn't have to call the 800 number. Jim would give him a direct line. He'd get on anytime he wants. Look, he's intelligent. He's well-spoken. He's got great energy. And he knows his stuff. He shows up with some confidence and something to say. That is a great get for a random guy. That is the top of the food chain right there.
We're all random, baby.
Yeah. So what do you got? Okay, listen. Give me the lock of the weekend. Who is the lock of the weekend? If our fans are going to go bet, they want to throw some money down, who do they go on?
Man, I'm gonna say Rashad.
It's got to be Rashad, right?
I'm going to say Rashad.
Yeah, and I think there's some questions there. I don't know how big of a lock Rashad is, but I am with you. These are very close fights. I think that you've got a reason to believe Khabib's going to win. He's beat 23 guys, but it's not a lock. This is his toughest fight. That the main event, man, these guys already fought and it was a draw. And then as far as Hunt and Overeem goes, you know, I got Reem in that. Hunt could put him to sleep in the first round. I mean, the way those guys fight with their style, with their background and history and the fact that they matched up before, it's hard to say. I'm with you. I think Rashad is the lock of the weekend, and I don't think he's a lock. But I think he is more likely to win. Look, if anybody is interested in going along with us or putting your own money where your own mouth is, go to betdsi.com. You put up $50 using the promo code BADGUY, one word, BADGUY. They will match your $50. Even money, you will have $100 on the books. If you put that on Rashad, like Joel and I think you should, Joel and I aren't very good gamblers for the record, but if you go along with us, you will turn your $50, let's see, your 50 doubles into 100 right now, Rashad, with the odds. Joel, do the calculation. $180. Your $50 becomes $180 at betdsi.com if you put it all on Rashad. And if Rashad loses and you put $50, then you lost it all, but you had a little bit of fun. Until next time, for Joel, I am Chael, and you are welcome.
Baby.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hi, I'm Larry McReynolds, host of the new podcast, Larry Mack, America's Crew Chief on Podcast One. As a two-time Daytona 500 winning crew chief and current analyst for Fox Sports and FS1, I'll be bringing you a unique perspective on everything NASCAR, from how a race plays out, strategy on pit road, technical issues, and anything in between. Download new episodes now on podcastone.com or subscribe at iTunes.